The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly chess interview show with accomplished chess players, authors, personalities, and adult improvers where they discuss their lives, their careers, and share tips about how to improve at chess. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. So without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. I am interviewing someone today who I never would have guessed I would be interviewing, and he probably didn't guess he was going to be on a chess podcast either until I reached out. He is an award-winning sports columnist and a best-selling author of 6 books. He's written for Sports Illustrated, NBC Sports, The Athletic, many other outlets, was twice named the Sports Columnist of the Year by the Associated Press. His most recent book, The Life and Afterlife of Harry Houdini, I picked up to skim through just to sort of be able to talk about it. And I ended up reading the whole thing and loving it, even though I'm not someone who was inherently interested in magic, but that's the kind of writer he is. He has moved me to tears many times over the years, I have to admit. He's also a podcast host. He has a sports adjacent podcast, I would say, called The Podcast, co-hosted by Michael Shore, who of course is the creator of Parks and Rec and has worked on so many other landmark sitcoms here in the US. So always entertaining to listen to The Podcast if you're interested in things like sports and drafting of cereals and stuff like that. So with that, and I suppose I should mention something about chess. So it turns out that Joe is quite a chess enthusiast. I'd seen him tweeting at Levy Rosman, Gotham Chess a few times, and kind of seen that escalate over the past year or so as many people's interest in chess has escalated recently. And then in his Substack, which I am a loyal reader of, his email newsletter, he recently wrote about chess and sort of fleshed out his relationship. So that was when I couldn't resist inviting him on the show. And lo and behold, here he is. So let's welcome Joe Posmansky to the show. Thanks for joining us, Joe.
Absolutely. Thank you. I can assure everyone that I am the worst chess player that you will ever have on this podcast. So I think that is something I take a great deal of pride in.
Well, congratulations. I mean, I don't know if that's true because we do interview chess businessmen and stuff like that. And, you know, some of them are a little, maybe perhaps a little sensitive about your rating, their ratings. We were talking before we recorded. You are not ashamed of your chess addiction. You know, your column that you wrote was about sort of your love-hate relationship, and your chess.com profile is not hard to find, and you're rated about 1150. Can you confirm or deny this, Joe?
I can confirm, yes. I'm roughly between 11 and 1200 normally, but very excited. I hit 1800 in puzzles, so I feel like I must be getting better.
That's great. That's good to hear. Yeah. And there's a lot of sort of threads to pull on from, I don't know how many words it was. It took a few minutes for me to read, but from this column that you wrote. But why don't we start with sort of big picture? So you mentioned in that column that your dad was a chess master, which I didn't know. So tell us a bit about your dad and your early entrance into chess.
Yeah, my father was, I grew up in Cleveland, and my father was very much of a chess player. I mean, would play every week in various clubs and in tournaments, and actually out. There's a wonderful little coffee shop in Cleveland called Arabica that there would, all these chess enthusiasts would get around and play outside, and he would sometimes join in on that. So he was quite good. It's been difficult for me to to sort of gauge. You know, I know that at one point he was rated above 2,000, and I know that he won some version, some level of the Cleveland Open, which was quite a big deal in our household. So he was very, very good. And he taught me chess when I was very, very young. And, you know, I think was hoping that it would take for me. And it didn't really. I mean, I played a lot when I was a kid, just because I played with him and I would try to, you know, sometimes he would take me along to the club and I would play some of the people there. So I played some, but I definitely lost touch with chess for years and years and years after that. And it wasn't really until the weirdest of all places, a running back named Priest Holmes, sort of brought me back into chess, and I've sort of been haunted by it ever since.
Nice. Yeah. Priest Holmes, an American football player for the international listeners. And Joe has written about his chess games with Priest Holmes over the decades. So playing against someone like that, so that piqued your interest. And I read somewhere the scouting report that Priest Holmes gave of you, where he said you were a little aggressive and eventually would mess up or something like that, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he said I was a good player, but I choked.
Right. Sorry.
Was his precise scouting report. Yeah, Priest Holmes, for those who are international listeners, he was at one point, you know, as good a running back as there was in professional football. He set a record for most touchdowns. And it was during that stage of time when he was performing at this incredibly high level that we just started playing chess weekly before games. It started with a story that I was doing, but I think he loved it. He loves chess, and he thought it was sort of something that took him away from the pressure of the moment and the sort of grind that was the weekly practices. And so every Friday we would play, and then on Sundays he would perform and be a superstar on the field. And then the next Friday we'd play again. It was a really a great insight in him, and it really did kindle something in me about chess.
Yeah. And you describe in one of the things you wrote about it, like him spending like 20 minutes on a move. So these are like epic confrontations. This is not like you fly, you know, throw the pieces around, good game, and back to the practice. It sounds like they were really serious endeavors.
Yeah, there was almost, the way I recall them, almost every game I would get a sizable advantage. I would win, you know, win a piece or be a piece ahead or have him in some sort of danger. And I don't think he liked anything more than getting out of that. I mean, he kind of felt like he always knew that he was going to be able to get out of it. And that was wonderful for him. It was terrible for me. I mean, it was, you know, that feeling that you have, you know, a game pretty much in hand, and then just to time after time after time watch the guy come back and beat you is—it's not the best feeling in chess. I'm sure everybody can feel that one.
Oh yeah, we all know that feeling. But I mean, yeah, to have the chance to beat like a world class athlete in anything, you know,
yeah,
like I'm sure that makes it burn even a bit more. So, did you ever beat him, Joe?
I did. I did actually beat him a couple of times. We actually had one. This weird, weird experience where he had gotten hurt badly and had to sit out for, you know, 6 months, 7 months, where he literally couldn't do anything. And I went to visit him in San Antonio, Texas, and he was, you know, rehabilitating and trying to come back. And then, you know, I was interviewing him, and then he said, "You want to play some chess?" And I said, "Yo, sure, anytime you want to play." And we ended up playing in a restaurant that I don't believe is international, a Hooters in San Antonio, Texas, he literally got a table. He brought his set and I beat him. We played two or three times and I won all of them that day. And I told him he could always beat me anywhere except for a Hooters. If we were inside a Hooters restaurant, forget it. I was going to win.
Nice. Yeah. So Hooters, for the aforementioned international listeners, it's kind of like a sports bar where famous for the women being scantily clad at it.
Maybe I was married at the time, so maybe he was distracted and I was focused.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, I'm married now. I wasn't just married at the time, but yes.
Right. yeah. And we should say again, We're really gonna try to stick to chess. As I was telling Joe before we started recording, I'm a huge fan of his work and have been for years. Although I think he hears a lot of people, like, even though I'm a sports fan, my favorite writing is often about his being a dad. Like when he writes about being a dad, he has a very famous piece that went viral about taking his daughter to see Hamilton. But I'm most interested because obviously a writer of Joe's stature is, you know, the reason you get to be an award-winning writer is sort of your ability to sort of observe patterns in the human condition. And for me to hear him talk about chess and sort of contextualize what we here in the chess world have been experiences as chess boom is something I look forward to. So without further ado, Joe, you talk a lot about your favorite content creators in your newsletter, but I guess I want to hear about that, but I guess we should bring it forward. So you're interested in chess over the years. You mentioned you read a few books and you mentioned it accelerated in the past year and a half, but aside from the Priest Holmes thing, how often were you playing chess in the intervening, say, 10 years?
I would say not very often at all. I would every now and again. I was always interested in chess books, but not necessarily instruction books. I was really interested in the Bobby Fischer Goes to War book, for instance.
Oh, great book, yeah.
Which is wonderful. And a friend of mine and someone who I actually share a literary agent with wrote a book, A Chess History, which was excellent. But again, it wasn't... It did build around, you know, the Immortal Game and all that, but it wasn't really a chess,
was that the David Schenk one?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Exactly.
Yeah. And so, I would read about it occasionally. My father has stopped playing chess, which is kind of a shame. He actually asked me a couple of weeks ago to get him a chess set. So he wants to like an automatic electronic chess set. And, so I'm going to do that for him. But I would say I played almost never, every now and again, interestingly enough, because of the Priest Holmes thing, an athlete would ask me to play chess, a baseball player or a basketball player, would say, hey, I play chess. We ought to play online. I played against Daryl Morey, who is the general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers, and he beat me. So I would occasionally get those sorts of things. But almost never. It was not for me the Queen's Gambit, which I know, was such a lightning rod for chess for so many people, even though I watched Queen's Gambit and liked it. I think it was the pandemic. I just think it was, I'm at home and I was looking for things to do. And, I have all these sort of quirky interests in magic and some other things. And I just thought, wow, I had to play some chess. I had to try to get better at chess. It's I've always feel good when I'm playing well, and I think that it does so many things for you, mentally. And I had to start trying to get better, and so I entered the world, and I got to tell you, I knew nothing about it. I mean, it was walking into the world of chess and seeing all of these content creators and understanding, some of the greatest players in the world and the strategies, and it was wide open for me.
Nice. Well, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, Joe, and then we're going to dig deeper into your power rankings. We'll do a draft of chess content creators. Perpetual Chess is proud to be brought to you in part by Chessable.com. Chessable, of course, is known for its proprietary move trainer technology, which utilizes space repetition to quiz you and make sure that you remember whatever tactical patterns or opening sequences that you're working on. They have a huge catalog of great books from top flight authors, both for purchase. And if you check for their short and sweet courses, you can find tons of free content. Speaking of free content, Chessable, of course, has also recently launched an adult improvement focused chess podcast called How to Chess, with yours truly hosting it. Check for it on Chessable's YouTube channel, and you can also subscribe on the podcast platforms.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we are back. And I'm just kidding about the draft, although he does have these epic drafts on his podcast of the most random things in the world. So a draft of chess content creators would be quite at home there on the podcast, but we won't steal his material. So with that out of the way, Joe, you talk a lot about how you sort of got into the online world. So walk us through your sort of YouTube progression. Do you remember the first YouTube video you watched? And then how did it sort of, grow from there?
Yes, I actually have a pretty clear memory. I started watching, is it Agadmater? I don't know.
Agadmater, yeah.
Who I guess, probably the biggest in the world. I don't know. But I just started watching some of his videos. And you know how it is in YouTube. You watch one and then every time you go on YouTube, they present you several others. And I started watching more. And loved them. I just thought the videos were so fun. I loved going through these games. It was really interesting to me because at the time I didn't play chess. I probably had a chess.com account. I can't remember when I started that, but I didn't go on there and play. I was just really interested in watching him break down these games and just watching the genius of Magnus Carlsen is just, was really interesting to me. And I felt really good because I felt like I could follow the logic. Like I couldn't do it myself, but I felt like I understood. He would say, he's trying to open up the middle here. He's trying to close off the middle. He's trying to do this. And I just thought that was so interesting. So he was the first, and I would say for a long time, he was the only one that I was watching a couple of months. He was the only one that I was watching and was still pretty unaware of the sort of larger content world that's out there, which is obviously huge. And I was not aware of that. I kind of thought like, hey, here's one guy. I'm sure there's others, but I mean, he sort of seems to be the biggest thing going. I bought some of his merch and I mean, it was really, really focused. The girls would love coming upstairs. My daughters are now 19 and 16, and they would come upstairs and I'd be watching and they would just stay just for him to say that little hello everybody.
Exactly.
And then they would leave. They didn't want to see anything else, but that was enough for them. So that's where it started, it got me interested enough that I started thinking about playing, but I mean, I was definitely watching him for a long time before I started playing.
Okay. Yeah, and Agadmater Antonio, of course, he's legendary. I did do an interview with him about his background for listeners who haven't gotten that far back in the archive. But yeah, and Joe, to answer what you alluded to about the most popular, I actually, earlier this week, it'll be out a couple weeks before our interview, interviewed your another person we'll get to, Levy Rosman. And as we record, Agadmater, Hikaru Nakamura, and Levy Rosman are within, basically inches of each other in terms of being the most popular. But Levy seems to be on a slightly steeper ascension. So sooner or later, it seems like he's going to be the most popular, although I'm fans of all three of theirs. So you're watching Agadmater, and of course he hit on the secret formula of keeping the video reasonably short, setting an atmosphere. He's got the distinctive voice, as you alluded to. He's got Mado the chess dog chilling in the background. So he's really built a huge following through the just sort of relaxing friend showing you a game tone that he's built. And then do you remember how you finally discovered the bigger world that you alluded to?
I think what was happening, I think it was purely a YouTube thing. I think YouTube started showing me other people. I wrote a little bit about this in the story. We haven't talked about it here, but I actually met Hikaru a few years ago when I was, as a sports writer, I was doing a story on a legendary old baseball player named Stan Musial, and I was going to interview another legendary old baseball player named Bob Gibson, both of them who are gone now, but I was in a restaurant to interview Bob Gibson. And the person who was sort of handling everything said, I would love to introduce you to Hikaru. And I said, great. And I had no idea who it was. I had no idea who he was. And he said, no, this guy is, and this was before he was certainly successful, but I don't know that he'd won a U.S. championship or anything at that point. And I talked to him, and I loved talking to him. So, and he was great. And he, at the time, he was telling me how he really wanted to make chess more popular in America. He saw that as one of his biggest goals, was to really build up chess in the United States. And we exchanged numbers and said that I would try to do a story on him. I think I was working for Sports Illustrated at the time. And it never came about, but I was aware of Hikaru. So I saw Hikaru was on, there was videos of Hikaru doing things. And I watched those and I liked them. I didn't like them, to be perfectly honest, as much as I liked Agat Mater. And then I started watching Eric Rosen. So Eric Rosen was next. And I don't know where he stands in the grand scheme of things. But I really liked it. I liked the way he broke things down. I liked that he was sort of giving us little traps. I liked, him showing us the Stafford Gambit. I would say that Eric probably more than anybody got me playing again. But I started watching him do that, especially particularly with the Stafford Gambit. And I thought, well, I want to try that, and you try that on chess.com and lose 9 games in a row. And then one guy falls for it and, right. And you feel like you're on top of the world. And so I would say that Eric and his content, and at this point, it's clear that this is all blowing up. I mean, this is definitely post Queen's Gambit, the show, and everybody sort of getting into chess. And that eventually led me to Gotham Chess, and has become by far my favorite of them all.
Nice. Yeah. And you write about this at length. And of course, I'll link to the piece, and everyone listening should read Joe's piece if you haven't already. But so just to give you a bit more context about Eric, I mean, everybody loves him, basically. I mean, as you say, he's not quite as popular. I mean, he's still huge and obviously very successful, both as a Twitch streamer and a YouTube content creator. But he's been on this show a few times. But more than that, just guest after guest comes on and says, oh, he helped me with this, he helped me with that, in terms of like the behind the scenes, the analytics of YouTube, stuff like that. So that's the scuttlebutt on Eric. Now, Levy, of course, great guy. I mean, I think he's a great guy, but he's not as universally beloved, because he shoots from the hip much more so than Eric. So what is it about Levy that drew you in?
Well, Eric, obviously all I know about these people, other than Hikaru, who I've talked to, all I know about these people is what I see, right? So Eric comes across as a super nice guy. I mean, it's pretty clear that he's a good guy. He's obviously terrific, mind and terrific at, breaking things down. And so that was fun on a whole different level. What I would say about Levy and Gotham Chess is it's just so entertaining. He really is a natural entertainer. He's very, very funny. I think he is. And it's funny. It's funny within the world of chess. Like, if anybody who doesn't play chess or follow chess watched it, I don't think they would have any idea what's going on. But to watch him respond, particularly my favorite thing that he does is the guess the ELO, where he has a couple of his people send him games, and then he guesses what the ELO is of those players, and the reactions he has to some of the bad moves is just hysterical to me, because it's exactly, if I could put a picture of what I feel like when I make one of those moves, right, it would be Levy screaming at me like, bro, what are you doing, dude? That's the voice I hear in my head. So I just think he's very, very funny. But I also think he definitely feels to me like there's so much passion that he puts into it. Of course Eric does too, and all of them do, but you can feel the passion he feels for not just for chess, but for trying to make chess more accessible to people. I think he's terrific. I think he's absolutely terrific. So he's my favorite streamer, but but he's not necessarily my favorite. I bought a couple of his courses and they're good. I really like them a lot. But my favorite when it comes to the courses is the guy, and you'll know who it is, the Ginger GM.
Oh yeah, Simon Williams.
So yeah, I love his courses. Like, I love the way he breaks down. I bought a couple of them. I've, you know, tried to do his Jibava London and his regular London, and I've tried, you know, I'm not super successful. But you know, but let me say something else about courses from a purely amateur, not very good player. The one problem with these courses is that they really set you up against the best moves. Right. You know, they show you, and the people I'm playing are not making the best moves. So I don't know how to respond at all to bad moves. And then I make an even worse move and then I lose. And that's, so it's, I found that to be very, very interesting that, you know, I bought these courses and I followed them, and they certainly have made me a better player. But I'm constantly finding myself going, well, wait a minute, they're supposed to move the C pawn, and they're not moving, you know, and it just, and then I'm done.
Yeah. Everyone knows that feeling. Like, you know, you memorize these, reams of theory, especially as you continue to get stronger, and you know what you're supposed to do against a certain move. But then when they don't play, right, you're like, hey, could you play the move that I actually know what to do against? Like, even, you know, it's a better move. Yeah.
It's a better move.
Just saying. Yeah. You might want to know that. So, I mean, the only thing I can advise, Joe, and, this is not original advice coming from me, is just every time that happens, try to learn one more move, you know. And luckily, like, even if it's not in the course, you can just turn on the engine with the post game analysis on chess.com, and at least you'll know the best move. You might not even understand why at the time. I mean, it's good to try to futz around and try to figure out why. But even if you can't, I mean, and we'll get to your coach too. You can of course ask your coach, which is a great thing to do. But anyway, just like inches at a time, you know, one move at a time, you'll learn more and more. And pretty soon you'll find you know how to punish a few of those moves that you weren't expecting. But this has all been fun. But I want to dig a little deeper into your own game, Joe, because that's really where the rubber meets the road, obviously. But first, sure, we're going to take one more break and hear from our sponsors. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by aimchess.com. If you haven't checked out aimchess.com by now, what are you waiting for? What aimchess does is it collects your games from the major chess sites and then gives you actionable advice of how to improve your game. It might be to work on a specific opening, or to get better at end games, or improve your time management, or whatever it may be. And then it gives you related puzzles to help you improve that specific skill. They are constantly improving the site. They recently added blindfold tactics, time management training, common checkmate patterns. So there's so much to do there. If you decide to subscribe, be sure to use the promo code PERPETUAL30. Details are in the show notes for aimchess.com. Okay, so Joe Poznanski on chess.com rated about 1150. Joe, by the way, I have to admit that I looked at two of your games last night. And one of them was very true to form, because it was from yesterday. I don't know if you've played in the past like 12 hours or whatever, but you were like winning. And then like your queen just got a little too aggressive and got stuck on F6, and like, boom, it all unraveled.
I know exactly the game you're talking about. So if I had to describe my biggest chess weakness, because I have many, many chess weaknesses, but if I had to describe my biggest chess weakness, it is I never give up on an attack. Even after that attack is no longer vital, it's no longer valid, there's nothing to do. So in the game you're talking about, my opponent, I was winning. I was clearly winning, and I won a bishop with the way I played, and I was doing okay. And I had a situation set up where I felt like I was really close to a checkmate, and he brought his rook over and brought his queen back, and I was not even close to a checkmate. There was nothing. I had no attack whatsoever. But in my mind, I still had an attack, right, and I'm still trying to sort of, you know, move around and mess around. And next thing I knew, my queen was trapped and it was over. So that wasn't the best.
Yeah. I mean, what I would say, Joe, is so I am going to have to do one sports analogy. The prevent defense gets lampooned in football. Basically, the idea for listeners not so familiar with football is it's a way to play to nurse a lead. Basically, yeah. A lot of coaches are sort of over aggressive with the prevent defense, and then it ends up sort of backfiring because you're like, well, I don't want to give up a big play, but then you're giving up 10 small plays instead. Yeah. And so a lot of sort of the more analytically focused sports fans will, there's now been a backlash against the prevent defense. And of course, for soccer fans, there's obviously a corollary if you're up 2 goals or something like that. Now, what I'll say is in chess, the prevent defense is actually much more effective. In chess, when you're up material, you just want to take the air out of the ball, you know, just trade some pieces off, and you don't have to go for the quick kill anymore because in that game, you were up a piece, you know.
Yeah.
So your attack was good. You outplayed him throughout, or her, I'm not sure, through about the first 20, 25 moves. But then once you get up a piece, you can kind of take your foot off the gas more so than you can in other competitive endeavors.
I did analyze that after it was over. I did go through with the computer, and what the computer said was exactly just trade queens. That was literally what I needed to do was trade queens, and I was in a position. And but I wouldn't give up on that attack. I've got to do that. I've got to start. I'm not a prevent defense as our friend Priest Holmes would tell you. I've never been able to get that prevent defense down, but I do need to get that down.
And I did in that particular game. I mean, we shouldn't go too deep on it because this is an audio only podcast, but there's an element of luck in chess, whether people admit it or not. Like in the macro sense, there's not, you get the results you deserve, but in the micro sense, and like it wasn't preordained that your queen would have 0 squares when they attacked it, you know, like, you know, there could have been 1 square and then you're still a genius. Cause as long as you don't lose your queen, you would have won that game. So, you know, these things happen, but you know, we learn from them and move on, which all of this is a good segue to your coach. So again, you talk about this in the story. So why don't you tell the story of what led you to FM Mikhail Perlstein as your chess coach?
Yeah, well, I actually, this was a pretty direct line. I saw a video by his son, Eugene Perlstein, who I guess is a grandmaster.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And it was a great video, and it was a video about how to deal with gambits, and including the Stafford gambit, like how to make sure to not fall into the traps of these various gambits. And I liked it very much. And he was listed on chess.com as a teacher, as a potential coach. And I thought, well, you know, I had to get a coach. I mean, why not? Why, you know, I'm around coaches all the time. I think this would be great. So I reached out to him, and he said that he's not doing that now. He's focusing on competitive play and so on. But he recommended his father, and he said, my father took me to you know, to become an international master and a grandmaster, and you know, he would be wonderful for you to work with. So I've been working with him. I've actually, the last few weeks, I've been too busy, so I've not had much time with him in recent weeks. But he's fantastic, just so fun, and it was so different than what I thought working with a chess coach would be. I really thought working with a chess coach would be a lot of drudgery, not in a bad way, but just a lot of, okay, let's work. You know, we're gonna really break down the end game. We're really gonna break down, you know, what you should be thinking about. But the way that we did it, he broke down my individual games. We went through a few of the games that I had played during the week, and he showed me a couple of sounder openings, particularly for Black. And we did go through some end game stuff, and did go through some other things, and it was really, really fun. You know, as my schedule hopefully lightens a little bit, I want to go back to it. I thought it was really good, and it made me a better player for sure. I mean, you know, and it was something that, you know, I was sunk in the 900s, on my Elo. And I lost at one point. I had this unbelievable streak of losing like 19 or 20 in a row, it felt like. And I just, it's so interesting to me that chess can be so, there could be so much like built on your confidence and on how you feel that particular day. And, and, And I just started getting in my head, and I would just make blunder after blunder. And he really worked with me on just trying to see the board in a different way, in a better way. And he always had this very funny thing. He does whenever I make a real mistake, he'll just show me another move and go, better, you know? And I'd be like, yeah, no, that is better. That would have been the right move for me to make. And he always kind of, you know, like, oh, I'm sure that you would have thought of this if you had spent a little more time on it, which is probably not true, but very, very fun guy to work with.
Nice. Well, I'll say a few things, Joe. Number one, I'm friendly with Eugene Perelstein. He's been on this podcast. He was recently on my new venture, How to Chess. So in addition to checking out his chess.com video, which I know Eugene said is doing really well, I think it resonated with a lot of people beside you. I recommend people check out Eugene's other content as well. His website, Chess Openings Explained. And also, Eugene mentioned, I should mention that his dad, Mikhail, has a few more openings for serious students. So if anyone's interested, you can reach Eugene through Chess Openings Explained or find him on Twitter or whatever. So just wanted to throw that in there. But more importantly, the reason I reached out to Eugene was to get the scouting report, Joe. I had to get Mikhail's comments. So via Eugene, I got the straight dope on you. but the first thing he said, Joe, is that, you know, the hook in your column was I hate chess, but he said he doesn't hate chess. He loves chess. He said, it's clear that you love chess, but what you hate is losing. And he said, you're a sports junkie at heart. And, you know, anyone who's really into sports, often there's sort of a competitive background to that can be the impetus for improving in chess. So do you confirm or deny these allegations, Joe?
He is 100% right. And it's, I don't hate losing. And Mikhail would know this. And we've talked about this. I don't hate losing in the sense of a competitive thing. I hate losing because I know I should be better. Like, it's like, right, if I get outplayed by a really good player, which has happened now and again, where I'll play a very good man, I'll feel like I'll play very well, but the guy's just better than me. I love that. At the end of that match, I feel great. I'll usually send the person a note saying, you know, that was so much fun for me, or, you know, it's great. It's when I play badly and blow, you know, games, it just drives me crazy. And it's, so I am competitive in that way. I'm competitive in, like, I have higher expectations for myself than I probably should based on my own chess ability. But that's really good for him to hear him say that. That's, he's very fun. He's really, really fun.
That's great. Yeah. And Joe, obviously, like, everyone feels that way, the way that you describe. I mean, and everyone has that sort of, like, love hate thing too. I mean, maybe there's some people for whom it's pure love, but yeah, it just feels so personal when, like, you know, when you make a blunder, when anyone makes a blunder, yeah, that, yeah, it's just vexing. And it's, you know, I'm rated in the 2100s and it's the same thing. It's just, you know, and I feel the same way when I lose. Like, okay, sometimes you just get outplayed and, you know, it is what it is. But it's the unforced errors that are just singularly aggravating in chess.
Well, yeah, like in the game we were talking about that I played yesterday where I got my queen trapped, that moment, you know, everything's going and I feel like I'm winning and I feel great and I feel like, yeah, I'm playing pretty well. I mean, I didn't feel like that was as, you know, I played better games recently, but I was playing well enough. And that moment where he pulls the rook over and I realize my queen is trapped and just like, you are the dumbest person on earth. You're just absolutely the single. And then I hate chess. So that's like, that's what gets me to hate chess. I don't hate chess. I hate myself for doing that.
And then, of course, you hung your rook a few moves later. Like, it unravels, as you said. There's like the trend and then...
At that point, that's the other thing, by the way, that's my other, if my second fatal flaw is I never make a mistake without following it up with another mistake ever. Once my mind is like, oh man, this is lost, I just lose complete focus on the board and I got to get better about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's a constant challenge. And I will say the other game I looked at, your opponent just punted off everything, you know, so it does work both ways.
It did. And that was an easy win, which is always feels good, but I always feel the empathy for the other person who's thinking, how bad they feel about themselves, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, which is empathy is, yeah, sometimes it doesn't feel real over the computer, but there is another human there. It's
there's another human on the other side. Exactly.
Yeah, it's good to keep in mind. So a little bit more on the blunders, and actually the topic of the video I did with Eugene was like how to avoid losing. I mean, how to sort of limit blunders. But is that something you're working directly on, other than the sort of meta analysis that you're doing with FM Mikhail Perelstein?
Yeah, no, definitely focusing on blunders. And I would say that the two things are, of course, what my coach has been talking to me about, which is, you know, been very good about seeing the board. And then also thinking, which I'm very undisciplined about, but when I'm disciplined about it, it's good, is thinking about the Gotham chess idea of looking for checks, the captures and attacks first. And when that does happen, because I play fast, which I shouldn't, that's what happens is I think, you know, it's always funny because you hear people who don't play chess say, oh, how many moves ahead do you think? I think three moves ahead. The problem is that they're the wrong three moves. I've just already got right. What my next move is going to be. It's like, it's not hard to think moves ahead. It's hard to think good moves ahead. So I, you know, as far as that, but when I can slow myself down and say, okay, look, I know this is the best move, or I think this is the best move, but let me look and see and be, then I really am much better about not seeing blunders. I I'm sure this, I'm hardly alone in this. I forget. The reason I blundered the rook, if I'm not mistaken, is the queen had gone to the other side of the board and I just forgot about it. Their
right.
queen.
Yeah, the long range.
I just forgot. Like, oh yeah, they've got a queen there. I didn't even think about it. So I like lose focus of half the board and so I'm trying to open my mind on those sorts of things.
So does he have you doing any puzzles? Do you have like a regimen, or is this more sort of like, you know, I'll get lessons, it's fun, I'm playing, but like, because we talk a lot about sort of training regimens on the podcast as well. So how hard are you hitting the books, Joe?
He's giving me puzzles every week. I get puzzles, which I love. I actually really love the puzzles. Like I mentioned at the top, I mean, I do a lot of chess.com puzzles. I'm very proud of an 1800 rating on puzzles. I want to believe that's going to lead to better chess as we go forward. So we do a lot. He does a lot. I said earlier that he's not a guy that we spend a lot of time on the end game, but that's not true. We do. We spend a lot of time on the end game, and he's given me numerous puzzles on the end game, and I kind of feel like I'm a decent end game. Like I kind of understand some of the basic concepts of the end game, but every puzzle he gives me completely baffles me. He's like, all right, where do you move your king? And I'll move my king, and he'll go, that's the place you move. You can't win.
Right.
It's like instantly. So we do quite a bit of puzzles. Mostly what we do though, is definitely go over games that I played, really, really focus on trying to, and we go over not just, you know, mistakes or whatever, but hey, this was a good move, but did you think about this? Did you consider, you know, attacking here? Pawn play, a lot of talk about pawn play. It's certainly not a strength of mine. And then he's, like I say, he's given me a couple of openings to work on. So, you know, one of the big things is that I now play the Scandinavian on E4. So he's worked with me quite a bit on that, like things like that.
Sounds pretty holistic. Sounds good. Those Ukrainians, the end games are in their blood. You're in good hands. And you mentioned your daughters. I mean, it sounds like one is already college age. The other one is approaching. Your daughter's, of course, famous to me from reading you over the years. But so dare I ask, Joe, maybe when they go to college, any thoughts of trying out a chess tournament?
Maybe. I've been invited to come to a couple of different chess tournaments. I'm scared to death. I mean, honestly, the one saving grace for me of playing chess.com is that the person who's across the board from me, they can't see me. Like that's like the idea that I'm going to be across the board from somebody and I'm going to make these blunders. I'll just literally go to my hotel room and I'll never come out again. I'll be so ashamed. I think it would be fun. I'm still torn. I don't know if you ever feel this way. I mean, you're such a good player, and you know, I almost like studying chess as much as I like playing it.
Oh, that's very common. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love watching breakdowns of games. I love to sort of just go in and take a look at how openings work and different ways. So I like that's almost as much fun for me, or more fun for me in some places, than actually getting on the board and playing. So I don't know. I got to get better. I just got to get better before I feel like I can step out there and be in public with it.
Okay. I totally understand. And what I'll say, you know, much as I would love to say, like, come on in, you know, everything's going to be fine. Like you do feel heightened anxiety. One does feel heightened anxiety playing over the board, but it's also exhilarating when you put it together and play a good game. So my stock advice, Joe, is to try one at some point, basically. But no,
I should.
Yeah, but then if you don't like it, I'm not going to be like, you got to keep, you know, you got to keep doing it. Like, it might, you know, it might not be for everyone, but it is, you know, especially someone like you who, you know, obviously you make your living observing patterns of human behavior. I mean, this is just its own world, as we'll get to in your Houdini book. You know, these subcultures are fascinating just on their own.
They really are. And I would love to do it, you know, to just write about, go to a chess tournament and really write about it. I do have a question for you, as long as they were talking about this. Because all of the, basically, that I've been playing has been on chess.com or online, when you go back to the board and an actual chessboard and playing over the table against somebody, is that different? Is it harder to see the board? I don't know. I was wondering about that.
Some people, you know, I grew up analog chess. But some people have told me that if you're used to digital chess and you're going to play, you absolutely should practice with a set beforehand, even set up some of your puzzles on a set. So yes, it's a different feeling. You know, you've got to get used to the spatial orientation along with, as you say, the sort of social pressure that you're going to feel, whether it's in your head or not. So, but as you get more, as you progress, it becomes less of a thing. But even then, I mean, you'll hear people, like a lot of the trainers and grandmasters and stuff that I interview will say, when you solve puzzles, you have to set up a chess set because you have to sort of, mimic the feeling of needing to solve the problem with an actual chess set in front of you. So it is different, I would say.
I'm going to have to do that because my daughters, you mentioned my daughters, just for Father's Day, they got me a Harry Potter Lego chess set. That I need to build. I haven't actually built it yet, but it's a full, you know, once I build it, it's a full Harry Potter chess set. And so I was thinking about setting it up right here next to my desk. And when I'm, you know, doing stuff to sort of start looking a little bit over the board and doing that sort of thing. So, I think that'd be good.
That could be fun. I'd have to check out the Harry Potter set. I'm not super familiar with it, but one other just tiny word of warning. If you do play a tournament, they have very standard chess sets.
Sure.
So you might want to get used to that feeling if you're ever playing a tournament.
Yeah.
But anyway, Joe, I do want to talk a bit about your Houdini book because I loved it. As I was mentioning to you previously, I'm never been that into magic. Actually, my 8-year-old son has shown like moderate interest. So that was an extra impetus to read it. But I noticed you dropped a Karjakin reference in there, Sergei Karjakin. So that was nice to see. And I saw that you tweeted that you can't compare chess to anything. You said something like, the more you play chess, the more you realize it can't be compared to anything. But still, hearing all the people that you interviewed like nerd out about magic, I did see some similarities to chess. Do you feel like you have enough knowledge of both cultures to draw any comparisons?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think any culture that you go into, whether it's geeky, you know, basketball fans or geeky, you know, magicians or geeky chess or whatever it is, people who are super passionate about something, there are lots of similarities. I mean, I like magic. I've always did. Again, it was something I learned from my father, and I would go to these, you know, magic conventions to be doing this book on Houdini. And by the way, when I started that book, I knew nothing about Houdini, knew nothing about magic. It was just something that I was interested in, and I ended up in these, you know, these crazy places, which was wonderful. But the thing that strikes me is the way the passion comes through, and you just are when you're around people who love something, truly, truly love something. It's contagious. It's powerful. And you know, the same thing with magic. Of course, I love to watch magic performed at the highest level, but there's nothing quite as fun as being next to a super skilled magician, like my friend Joshua Jay, just over lunch and having him show me what he's thinking about, you know, what he's thinking about with coins or with cards. And I think it's got to be the same way with chess. What drew me into this world more than anything was the passion that I saw from Eric Rosen, what I saw from Levy, that I saw from Hikaru, that these people are not just great at this game, that it's something that consumes them in a really interesting way. And when you hear people talking about something they love that much, you can't help but love it a little bit yourself. And so I definitely think that there are super comparisons. There was a very funny moment for me when I was doing the book. You know, I'd written 5 books, I think, at that point. And they were all sports books. And so when I started doing this, you know, I was used to, as a sports writer, I would go in and most people knew who I was, or they knew somebody I knew. This world was completely cut off. Nobody cared about sports. Nobody had any interest whatsoever. And, you know, I see a little comparison with that with chess. Not that chess people are quite as cut off from the sports world as, you know, you hear Levy talk about basketball, or I guess Eric Rosen is actually a very good tennis player, which is very interesting. I would love to play him in tennis. But you know, just seeing people who are so devoted to this thing and to sort of the exclusion of everything else, it's really interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. I saw you mention I think it was in the afterword that like the Venn diagram of magic fans and sports writing fans, sports fans are what turned out to be pretty small. And I have to say, Joe, I have a Patreon page with about 400 subscribers, and I'm like geeking out that I'm interviewing you. I'm super excited because I've been reading you for so long, and I announced it and it was just crickets, you know, even though obviously you've got a great stature in the world of sports writing. But I think that Venn diagram might be fairly small too. And actually in the interview with Levy that you'll be able to hear by the time this one comes out, I asked him about you because I said, you know, I'm a big fan. I see that you guys follow each other. I know he's been tweeting at you. And he was basically like, yeah, I know. I read his chess piece. You know, I know that he's very well known. But Levy's mainly an MMA and an NBA fan. Yeah. So passing familiarity, but I encouraged him to read more of your stuff.
When I became a member of his Twitch, when I did that, you know, the name popped up when I became a member, and he's like, wait, is that the baseball writer?
And that's good.
So he knew that I was a baseball writer. And of course, like we say, we follow each other on Twitter, but I don't think he cares about baseball particularly.
No one does.
And I don't write MMA. I mean, I do write NBA, but I don't ever write MMA. So that's, we probably wouldn't be crossing paths much now.
Yeah, and I understand you have a baseball book coming out, right? The top 100 players.
That's right, I do. In September, it's called The Baseball 100, and it is just a countdown of the 100 greatest baseball players ever. And very excited about it coming out. I think it's going to be really, really great. And I don't think there's a chess reference in there. It's very long. It's 300,000 words because it's, you know, I write at length about each of the 100 players. And they just sent me the index, which is enormous. The index is like more than it's like 1,000 pages on Word, Microsoft Word, or 100 pages of Microsoft Word. And I was going through it, and I had like tennis players in there, and I had some actors in there, and I had some, I don't think I had any chess people in there. So
it's not too late, Joe. Get it in there.
See if I can push forward.
Yeah. So, Joe, I just have one or two more questions, if you don't mind. you mentioned the possibility of like pitching a story to Sports Illustrated back in the day. If you were to write a chess story, whether it be sort of a feature length or a book, do you have a sense of like what would be the most compelling thing from your vantage point?
I would love to do a big piece on what the chess world is like now. I mean, it would be similar probably in my mind to Houdini. Obviously Houdini was built around one, magician, but it was the story, as you all know, was really about all of these people who keep his memory alive, who study him, who are magicians themselves and so on. I find the world of magic, of chess and magic, but the world of chess, today's world, to be utterly fascinating. And it's not something I fully grasp, but I watch enough that I understand that a lot of the high-end super grandmaster chess is so theoretical now and so, you know, it's very safe and there are a lot of draws and I think that's very interesting. Obviously the supercomputers and how much they've changed the game and how much that's fascinating to me. These content creators, utterly fascinating to me. And the fact that it's so much bigger than I thought. I mean, millions and millions and millions of people are playing this game all over the world It's really, I think it's a wonderful world and a wonderful story. And I'd love to do it. I would love to do that. I don't know how qualified I am to do it as sort of a mediocrity, but I would love to do that because I find it utterly fascinating.
I think it's your mediocrity that does qualify you to do it. So, I mean, luckily you're not mediocre as a writer, which is more important. So, cool. And last thing, Joe, the World Championship coming up. Are you going to be watching? How closely do you follow top level chess in addition to sort of your interest in the content and working on your game?
I like recaps a lot. Various different people doing recaps and breaking down the games. I've done a little bit of watching, like of live streaming. Not as into it, to be honest. I mean, I think it's still pretty cool, but I like, it's almost like in a sports sense, I like the highlight packages little bit better, I like when somebody says, let me show you this game. This game will blow your mind. And the other four games were draws, but let me show you this one. And there's something in here that you can really take a lot out of. So yeah, of course I'm watching. I'm very, very interested. I've gotten good enough. This is sort of like I feel like Salieri from Amadeus, where I'm like, I can't do it myself, but I understand a little bit. I love that I now begin to understand the different strategies of these top players. Like that I love that I sort of understand that Magnus Carlsen is this kind of player, right? That he's sort of, I wouldn't say plotting, but that he moves slowly and he develops and he really builds and builds and builds and builds. And then there are other players who maybe they're a little bit more dynamic, but also take a lot more risk. I love that I'm getting to the point where I at least begin to understand. So, because to me, that is what makes sports, for me, it's watching. The more I understand how good a pitcher and a hitter are in baseball, the better I feel when those two face each other. I understand what it means. Same thing in MMA or boxing or tennis. If I can understand their styles a little bit better, so I feel like I'm getting better at that with chess. And it's people like you that can explain that really well to me. And so that's I think that's pretty cool. So I'll be watching. I just don't know in what form yet that I'll be watching.
Yeah, totally understandable. Those games are epic. And as you say, so many of them end in draws anyway when it's all said and done. I don't know if you're familiar, there's a raging debate in chess about to what extent the game should be sped up. Because if you have like the online rapid stuff, like that is a little more digestible, but it also obviously dilutes the quality of the games. And chess, of course, has this rich history of world championships where these matches are just epic. I mean, some of them went for months, and obviously now they've got it down to under a month, but they're still nothing that makes that demand of one's time the way a world chess championship does, like no other sport, you know, not going to get into the is chess a sport discussion.
I think that's right. Well, I mean, just physically, that's another facet.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just physically grinding in a way that is very difficult. So yeah, no, I'm excited about it.
Awesome. All right. Well, Joe, this has been quite a thrill for me. So thank you for humoring me and coming on and talking some chess. It's been amazing. This book about Harry Houdini, well worth it. If you're a baseball fan, definitely pre-order his top 100 players as I did. And if you're into nonsense and American sports, then check out the podcast. Anything else, Joe, before we let you get back to your busy life?
I think that sounds great. That sounds great. I'll just keep, I want to come on here when I reach, 1800, 1700, 1600, somewhere in that range. When I hit a landmark, I want to come back on.
Sure. And if you go to a tournament, we got to do a postmortem. I want to hear about the experience. So if that ever happens, that either a milestone or a tournament, and we'll make it happen.
Love it. Love it.
Okay. Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible, most of all to my producer, Matthew Passy. I also would like to thank everyone who helped spread the word about the show. Did you guys know that there's still people who have not heard of the Perpetual Chess podcast? There's even chess players who have not heard of the Perpetual Chess podcast. So we need to fix that. And the ways to do that include writing positive reviews on podcast platforms or YouTube comments, telling friends, all that stuff makes a difference in helping spread the word about the show. But of course, I most of all want to thank people who provide financial support to the show. Without you all, Perpetual Chess would not be possible. So without further ado, I would like to give thanks to the following people and entities. Chessable.com, David Lazarus of LazmanChess.com, coach of Dave's Young Tigers on Lee Chess, Quality Chess Books, the Capital City Chess Club, the Abysmal Depths of Chess blog, Adapta Interactive Web Designs and Services, Apprentice Twitch Channel, Aniti Deer, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porteau, Bill Sigler, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, the Charlotte Chess Center, the Chess Central's Chess Blog, Chessmood.com, Chris Flanagan, Chris Lott, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel Heath, Danny Davidson, David Mitchell, David Shriver, I am Dimitri Schneider, I am Eric Rosen, Eric Tam, Farhan Thawar, Barasawaf, Gary Foreman, Glenn Downing, Greg Harfst, I am Greg Shahadi, Gregory Gulick, James Holyhead, James Kennedy, Jay Garrison, Jeff Martinson, Jeff Schaefer, Jeremy Nielsen, John Jernigan, John Rockefeller, John MacArthur, Kevin Forsyth, Kevin O'Callaghan, King Cell, the King's Crusher YouTube channel, Lucio Casada Silva, the Law Offices of Stuart Katz, Matthew Feeney, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oblin, Mr. Mike Shahadi, the famous Mr. Dodgy, the Nerdinaze Twitch channel, Grandmaster Peter Prohaska, Peter Sodi, Philip Flummins, the Playmore Chess Academy of the Hamden Chess Club, Reuven Fisher, Ross Crossland, Seattle Chess Club, Shane Unger, Stefan Kelty, Stephen Martinez, Sven Gearson, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryan of StrongChess.com, Todd Kennedy, The Vintage Patsers, which is a Chess.com improver group, Wayne Bean, William Hogarth, and I also would like to thank Ace Viega, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Al Hastings, Alan and Maggie Sue, Alex Pejas, Alexander Markovitz, Antonio Cancino, Antonio K. Leonfort, FM Andre Terakov, Dr. Andrew Perry, Angus McLeod, Barry Hessian, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Bill Trammell, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brett Howard, Lynn, Brian, Chase, Brian Mullis, Bruce Scott, Brian Tillis of Palm Beach Chess, Cameron Davis, Chad Hilton, Chess Patzer Spain, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Kiefer, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Chabri, Christopher Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, a.k.a. Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Costa Carras, Courtney Fry, Craig Mallon, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Naylor, Dave Saylor, David Blaskoczek, David Brown, David Hamblin, David Cramley, Dalen Shelton, Tennis Parrish, FM Donnie Ariel, Dwayne Edmonds, Ed Daly, Ed Mead, Edwin Rodriguez, Ethan Smith, Evan Rosenberg, Ewan Richardson, Ian Mason, Felipe Melo Paria, Fox Valley Chess Club of Aurora, Illinois, Francis Letart-Lavoir, Dr. Frank Tortoris, Frank Zananis, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Gautam Narula, Gene Stewart, George Harris, Giovanni Russo, Hans Schutt, Harish Srinivasan, Howard Vihan, Jacob Kovach, Jason Apollo, Jason Murray, Jacques Perry, James Aspinwall, James Benastio, James Muir, Jason Woolham, Jaydeep Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeffrey Martello, Yep Hoyland, Jerry Wells, Jesse Zakumos, Jesse McNulty, Jim Ratliff, Joe Dasano, Joe Valdez, Joel Thomas Ramos, John McAdams, John Tully, Juan Almagor, Dr. John Fallon, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman, John Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jonathan Slater, John Quist, John Tully, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, WGM Jen Shahadi, Joel Rocky, John Thompson, Grandmaster Josh Friedel, I am Kare Christensen, WGM Katarina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, Kevin Pryor, I am Kostya Kravutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Kyle McAvoy, Larry Cook, Larry Ryforth, Laura Boyovsky, Macaulay Peterson, Maria Emelyanova, aka Photochess, Mark Shaves, Mark Fitzpatrick, Mark Miller, Mark Wilkins, Marco Bulatovich, Martin Knudsen, Martin Krug, Matthew Tedesco of SeattleChessMeetup.org, Matthias Plock, the Mechanics Institute Chess Club of San Francisco, Michael Allard, Michael Hudson, Mike Clem, Mitchell Fabian, Nate Goble, Nate Solon, Neil Bruce, Negma Malajanov, Nicholas Isabel, Olaf Mueller-Michaels, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Blaine, Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Queenside Management Limited of Switzerland, Randall Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Richard Hallenbach, Richard Tucker, Robert Callahan, Robert Tichy, Robert Turner, Rory Coleman, Rory Yearwood, Ryan Berg, the Say Chess YouTube channel and publishing empire, Scott McKinnon, Scott Rose, Sean Krause, Sebastian Finsterwalder, Sergey McCagan, Seth Ruzica, Sean Tracy, Silver Knights in Richmond, Stefan Roller, WGM Tatev Abrahamian, Thomas Brown, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, FM Timothy Wall, Tobiah Rex, Tom Edsel, Tommy Farron, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Vishnu Srikumar, William Brock, William Peterson, FM Zhao Cheng of Chess1000.com, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks to you all for the support, and we will catch you all next week.
Podcast Network.